From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on Forum, are public meetings broken? A key pillar of our democracy, public meetings are meant to give citizens a voice in shaping their communities on issues ranging from housing to schools or parks. The meeting process, however, often leaves out the voices of people who are not able to attend in person. A part of Forum's Activating Democracy series, we discuss how to navigate these problems and make your voice heard. And we want to hear from you. What has been your experience speaking out at public meetings? That's all next after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Local boards and commissions make some of the biggest decisions shaping our communities, from new housing developments to how school districts spend money. And those votes often happen during public meetings. Laws like California's Brown Act set guidelines to ensure that the public has a say in and has access to those meetings. Some experts, however, say the public meeting system is broken. Too few people participate, and those who do don't adequately represent the public. Working people, parents, and commuters have a hard time making it to meetings that can drag on for hours. And people who do show up are given a couple of minutes to present their thoughts, which allows for venting but not much dialogue, according to experts. As part of Forum's Activating Democracy series, we break down how people can best navigate the system and how it can be improved. And joining us first is Patrick Sisson. He's a senior reporter for Curb. That's a real estate news site, and welcome to the program. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Let me begin by just asking you, why is this a broken system? Mainly because of underrepresentation or misrepresentation?
Yeah, there's a couple things at play there. I would say one of the main things is this idea of misrepresentation. There have been a lot of studies that show that the people that tend to attend public meetings happen to be whiter than the communities at large, happen to be more likely to be homeowners than the community at large. And that tends to sort of skew the way that these meetings end up at results. In addition, as you mentioned in the intro, they're just not really set up to encourage the most public participation possible. It can happen in an evening, during the day, when people need to work. It's hard to get a babysitter. You have to travel a far distance. People can't take time off of work. There's just a lot of issues that really kind of combined to make it hard for the full community to attend.
Well, I know, a Chicago expat, so to speak, but you've said, I think, that we don't have many good examples in California of, the system being changed. We'll talk in the course of this hour of some places that have tried to make some serious changes. But what's the problem here in California? Is it anything specific that we have here? Most people, since we have such a housing problem, I think are there because they're concerned about housing. And as you say, they're usually property owners and they're usually white people, men.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that it's not just California, but the nation at large has an issue. When you talk about this sort of neighborhood level democracy and you think about a new housing project, one of the big sort of questions that a lot of experts I spoke to were grappling with was the benefits can be spread out while the sort of pains are distributed very locally. Like if you're building a new building that's supposed to increase the housing supply, the entire city or the entire part of the city can benefit, right? But then you think about the downsides. People might say there's going to be more traffic or I don't like the way this looks on the street. That tends to be incredibly locally distributed. So it's easy to get a lot of local voices that aren't in favor of something, as opposed to the sort of greater people who are like, yeah, this would be great, but they're not as sort of activated to get there and voice support for something that's happening not in their neighborhood.
So you have this big problem of lack of public participation unless there are hot button issues and low turnout unless there are hot button issues. But you also have a lot of people who don't understand the process and can't find the time. And we got to educate the public here. We got to maybe even start civic education pretty early. But can't there be things to help people attend meetings, childcare, for example?
Yeah, those are huge, huge benefits, ways to get more people there. The other thing I heard that a lot of sort of people who work in this realm, who sort of help try and increase public reception and engagement is reach out early and reach out before meetings happen. Minneapolis had a really big planning decision recently where they decided to upzone the entire city. It was part of this Minneapolis 2040 plan. And the city invested quite significantly in holding a lot of events, creating very robust online ways to give feedback, talking to people about the issues, and meeting people where they were, setting up booths at like county fairs, exhibits, public events. And what they really did was get people talking about the issues before the meetings happened, get them educated about what was going on, make it so they didn't have to spend time going to a specific event to get educated. And then by the time we got to the point where people were really talking about the issues and voting on these things, a lot more people felt engaged. You know, they really spent the time to make the connection between, hey, this kind of transit policy or this kind of housing policy will have these effects on your lifestyle and how you live every day in Minneapolis. And that kind of model, I think, is really something a lot of people should look at.
That model in Minneapolis has also made a lot of use of technology, hasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. They had a very robust online system to give comments. It got a ton of commentary from people all across the city and it really helped them reach out to people who usually don't get spoken to in these kind of situations. You know, when you have that kind of robust online tools, when someone's at an event representing the city, talking about these kind of issues, they out or hey, like leave a comment here. So that kind of thing makes it easier for people to feel like they're, you know, part of the conversation.
Talking with Patrick Sisson, senior reporter for real estate news site Curbed, and good to have you with us. Appreciate you being with us this morning. And we're going to, before I introduce a couple of other guests we have with us in studio here, I want to say that we're talking about housing. Obviously, that's a hot topic. But when we're talking about trying to get you engaged more in city meetings and going into some kind of public civic role, schools, environment, you know, there's so many things that people attend meetings for every day that have to do with things that affect you and your community. So I don't want to put too much emphasis here on housing. This is part of our Activating Democracy series, and we're trying to break down how people can best navigate the system. David Snyder is with us. He's executive director of the First Amendment Coalition in San Rafael. Welcome, David.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you, and also glad to have Mindy Romero back with us on forum. She directs the California Civic Engagement Project at the University of Southern California. Welcome.
Thanks for having me again.
Mindy, let me begin with you, and let's begin by talking about ways to essentially activate more. We talked about Minneapolis, but there's something I found about Lakewood, Colorado. I mean, they're actually increasing participation. I may be throwing you a curveball here because you don't necessarily know about it, but what they're doing in Lakewood, Colorado, they've set up websites, they've got people, they've modernized, I mean, in every way technologically, and they've actually produced about an 800% increase online in terms of public hearings, especially in that important area, demographic, if you will, about those under 35. So they've got more inclusivity. There has to be movement more. I'm not saying tech is the answer here, but there has to be more modernization to begin with, doesn't there?
Absolutely. Just simply, if for no other reason, to just reflect how people are living their lives. I think it's become increasingly difficult for people, particularly folks in the Bay Area that are commuting, right, have children, have work commitments, time is really short, and then to ask them, or if they want to participate, it's just a significant challenge. But at the same time, when we use technology, we have to make sure it's not just checking the box, that it is something that is actually, at the very least, allowing people to participate and hear and see, for instance, you know, allowing virtual kind of call in to a city council meeting or some sort of commission meeting, but at the same time, having a way for folks to actually give their comments and be able to get, hopefully, feedback or get those comments answered is a way to make sure that folks really are incentivized to continue to engage with technology, but that it also really is meaningful and there really is input and some sort of output.
Process needs to be streamlined, though. I mean, you know, you can spend hours at these public meetings and people just don't necessarily have the time anymore. Also, I'm just wondering, don't people express some concerns and maybe even trepidation about things like Robert's Rules of Order, parliamentary procedures, you know, those kinds of things? They weigh them down. They don't know how to work that system.
Absolutely. Who really does know what Robert rules of order are?
I had to study them at one point, but I'm an anomaly. Yeah.
Well, and I chair a board and been on boards. I've been part of a social services commission. But they are very structured. And really, maybe I should take a step back, if I may, and think about kind of two different types of ways that we engage. So we have these four very formal governmental structures like city council, legislative bodies, period, board of supervisors, commissions. And then we have other types of ways that we need required, government agencies are required often to get public input. And so typically that's done through maybe a community meeting, for instance. Those are very different kinds of structures. And in the more formal structures, people can be, as I think the gentleman earlier said, very intimidated. It's not representative. People that are already more comfortable in public speaking will speak. And then we have things like Robert Rules of Order, or at least that formal structure that really seems to leave out a lot of people, make them feel not only that they're confused and but also perhaps even not knowing those rules, they can feel disrespected in the process.
So what do we do about that? What can be done about that?
I think some of the suggestions, certainly doing pre-work before, making sure that the public is aware of not only the meeting, but making sure that they understand how the meeting is going to be. If there isn't going to be change, I would suggest change. But if the structure is the same, making sure folks understand what the structure is, particularly community leaders that can share that in a language that makes sense to folks, right? Make it accessible. So people come to the meeting and they understand, if they're only given 1 minute or 2 minutes, that they're not being shut out or cut off, but that is the process.
Can the officials do more to get people more involved? I mean, is it on them to some extent to take that responsibility?
I think it is. I think too often we cite the low civic engagement in our society. Today is voting day. And while there's a lot of interest in the primary, we know voter turnout will still be low because it's a primary. It'll be high for, I think, this type of election. And then we think about other types of civic engagement, and we blame often the residents or the community members for not participating. Why are people apathetic? Why don't they take the time to do this? And really, I think if we start by flipping that and putting the burden on the governmental agencies, on the elected officials, on the public officials, for why we don't see more engagement, that it really is their responsibility to, if the outcome is low, the outcome is low, and ultimately they are the ones that have to figure out ways, right, to hopefully innovate, to bring in more people and make it more representative.
Mindy Romero, again, is director of the California Civic Engagement Project at USC, University of Southern California. We also have David Snyder here in studio with us. He directs the First Amendment Coalition in San Rafael. And David, the Brown Act was supposed to ensure more public participation and more access to public meetings. What happened?
Well, the Brown Act really sets a sort of minimum, and that minimum is more about what is available to the public than what the government is actually providing to the public in a way. So the Brown Act ensures that most state and local government meetings are conducted in public, that there's minimum notice requirements set. So if the Planning Commission is meeting on March 4th, it has to send out an agenda 3 days in advance. But those are really a floor for access to for the public to come and participate. I think the point that Mindy and many others have made is that that is just the government should be doing more than that to actively encourage participation. And what we see with my organization is that the government agencies subject to the Brown Act, and for state agencies, it's in a law called the Bagley-Keene Act. All too often, they appear to be doing all they can to restrict public involvement. Transparency is a hassle for government agencies, but it's a hassle that they're obligated to undertake under California law. It's absolutely essential that people participate in their local government, because a representative democracy is meaningless and probably not even a democracy if the people don't have a voice or a way to participate in it. So California law is not too bad in terms of setting a base level of transparency and the opportunity for civic engagement. But whether civic engagement actually occurs is a totally separate question. And too often, I think, public agencies try to game the system and meet the minimum requirements without violating them, but they set their meeting at 8 p.m. They set public comment for that meeting at 11 p.m. And that's just unreasonable. And
especially people have to get up early and go to work. But here's another problem, and I'd like your thoughts on this, David. It used to be reporters would cover these meetings. We just don't have that kind of personnel anymore. Newspapers have cut back enormously, and that's a big part of the problem, isn't it?
It sure is. These meetings tend to be long. They tend to be, frankly, boring. I was a reporter for many years, and it's easy to – one of the main obstacles in these kind of meetings is you might fall asleep.
Yeah, take no-dos with you.
Exactly. And reporters were there and still to some degree are so that you didn't have to be, so that if there was something that was of public interest, the reporter's job was to sit through that horrible, terrible, boring meeting but extract the important elements that are of value to the readers. The number of reporters working across the state and across the country has dropped precipitously over the last 20 years. And so that sort of gatekeeper slash watchdog function that reporters once served is no longer there. And it's a lot to ask of any ordinary person who has a job or even doesn't have a job to show up at every local meeting that is subject to the Brown Act. You couldn't do it.
But if you value citizenship, there should be a way for you to exercise that. That's part of your – that's why people are voting today. They value their franchise. And I don't want to get on my high horse here or my pedestal, whatever. But the fact of the matter is there just aren't enough opportunities for people who are working and who have all of the difficulties and responsibilities of taking care of children and so forth have to do more.
Yeah, I think there are opportunities. I think it takes some work to identify the opportunities, and it takes a little bit of study to understand how to use those opportunities. So if you live in a city that has a planning commission, a city council, and you want to learn more about those bodies, most agencies in California are pretty good about putting a lot of information up online, whether it's organized well is a sort of a separate issue. And it can take some work to get through the websites, the barriers of a website. But with a little bit of study, with a little bit of organization, I think a majority of people can make it work. It takes some work. And I know that everyone is incredibly busy and overtaxed. But I think civic engagement is not terribly difficult if you're willing to put in a little bit of effort at the front end. And if there are organizations that you believe in, to participate in those organizations, which then may also have provide a window for you to get involved in your government directly. There are ways to do it, and I don't doubt that they're not always easy ways, but there are ways for people to be engaged and to participate.
We hope there will be more. I mean, we've got algorithms these days and apps for just about everything. Yeah, you're going to say something here, Mindy? I'm sorry.
No worries.
Mindy Romero, go ahead.
I just wanted to add a little bit. So I think I'm a bit more maybe pessimistic than David, although I certainly agree with everything that you talked about. But I think for many people, it is difficult. Some people it's not. It certainly can be ultimately doable, and we need it to be doable. We need more participation. And our elected officials and public officials, by the way, need to hear. They're making very important decisions every day at the local level and the state level, and they can't make those decisions appropriately if they don't have a full set of voices. But I was going to say that
– a whole range of voices, as you're suggesting.
A representative range of voices. But I was saying that I think it is very difficult for many, many people. The reality is that we have a lot of inequity in our society, and that also includes access to information. Some people that can still navigate even with our, which was an excellent point, our reduced kind of media capacity and coverage. Other folks, without that, they're relying on and what's often kind of taken the place is community groups or trusted community leaders to try to share that information. It doesn't get out to everybody. They can't really fill that gap completely. And also, we have to think about the historical context. Everybody's coming to the table, or at least potential table, with a different understanding, a different level of disconnection from the political process, a different level of trust in government and in elected officials, and a different kind of hope or expectation about if they do actually take the time, right, to give their voice, you know, in terms of hope and expectation, in terms of will they actually be heard, will they be listened to. We have to understand kind of the context people are in, the very realities and the history there as well.
Talking about activating democracy, our public meeting's broken. David Snyder and Mindy Romero are here with us in studio, and you can be with us as well. In fact, let me invite you to join us. Do you feel meetings are a good way to voice your concerns to local officials? And what has been your experience If you have actually gone to a public meeting or spoken out at a public meeting, we'd like to hear from you. You can give us a call right now at our toll-free number. The number to call is 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions to forum@kqed.org. Here's a tweet from Corey who says, the public process we've created in San Francisco has fueled a system where the rich get richer, newcomers are vilified, those who scream loudest too often get their way. And here's Holly who writes, I've been working to help elect a woman to our local county supervisor board. There's a noticeable lack of young to middle-aged people involved with her steering committee or attending community meetings to advocate for her because those meetings are frequently during work hours. We wonder why younger people don't get involved. They have to work. There it is again, David Snyder.
That's right. The timing of meetings is really important. And as I said earlier, agencies, I think, all too often game that in order to cut down on public involvement. So I often get calls from reporters or people involved in a particularly contentious issue somewhere in California, and they complain that, well, once this issue became contentious, somehow magically the meeting time got later and later, and now they've moved the public comment to the very end of the meeting so that it's happening at 11 o'clock. And I don't think that the majority of agencies in California behave that way, but every time an agency that is subject to the state's open meetings laws does that, they've scored one against transparency and against civic engagement. And they take steps like that that I think are unnecessary. But it's critically important, I think, for agencies to do more than just follow the basic letter of the law, but to actually structure meetings and communicate about meetings in a way that encourages participation.
There's a question from a listener who wants to know let me go to you on this, Mindy. We're coming up on a break here, but
sure.
This is Radu who says, what is actually achieved by commenting? Do the comments actually affect decision-making, or is it just about making people feel heard so they don't revolt?
Oh, that's a very good question. Well, to be honest, the reality is in many—
Excuse me. Sometimes the decisions are made before the meetings are even convened,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. Legislative bodies— we know that. And quite frankly, the public often will know that or see that when they come and they testify or they speak or they're just witnessing. They can get a sense of that. That can be incredibly frustrating and discouraging, right? Putting out your voice matters. There's power in numbers, so not just one voice or two voices or three voices, but certainly doing some mobilization, bringing that power in numbers. The reality is our elected officials do listen to their community, that's not the only thing that they listen to, and they have lots of different factors that affect their decision-making process. And sometimes those decisions are going to happen no matter what they hear.
Yeah. Here's a comment from Niels who writes, I spoke at a public meeting in Pleasant Hill recently while every other speaker was given unlimited time to speak and hear responses from the city council and local school board. When I spoke, my time was limited to 3 minutes and I was told to sit down. These meetings seem more focused on control by the city council rather than any sort of democratic process. We'll hear more of your thoughts and we'll go to your calls when we return. I remind you that this is part of our Activating Democracy series. The real question is about public meetings and whether they're broken, and if indeed they are broken, what can be done about them? David Snyder with us, Executive Director of the First Amendment Coalition in San Rafael, and Mindy Romero, Director of the California Civic Engagement Project. The CCEP is a nonpartisan research center at the University of Southern California. You're listening to the Forum on KQED Public Radio, and I remind you, you can join us. What's been your experience speaking out at a public meeting, and do you feel meetings are a good way to voice your concerns to local officials? Toll-free number 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Or get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum. Or email any questions to forum@kqed.org. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about public meetings and how to get more involved in public meetings and why it's necessary. The reality is that housing developments and money spent on education, there are so many things that come under the aegis of public meetings, and yet there are concerns particularly about time and about availability and about receptivity, I guess you could say, with respect to citizens' involvement. Kevin writes, San Francisco Board of Supervisors meetings have, one, no notification at building entrance if the meeting is still in session, and no notice as to what items are being addressed, no decent Wi-Fi, no instructions. We're hearing a lot of these kinds of complaints, and obviously some of you have had experiences and may want to have your voice heard here, but also if you have some recommendations about what can be done or about how people can be more involved, we'd like to hear from you as well. You can join us now, letting us know about, well, public meetings, good way to voice your concerns to local officials and what your experiences have been, even if you've had opportunity to speak at public meetings. Toll-free number is 866-733-6786, or get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions to forum@kqed.org. Let me bring a caller on, and that's Rob. You're on the air, Rob. Welcome.
Thank you. I wanted to kind of echo what it sounds like the guests have mentioned, which is that sometimes people go to these public meetings and the sense in the room that the whole people that showed up are against a particular thing or for a particular thing, but the group, like say the MTA, has already made up their mind on what the plan is, and they go against whatever the consensus is of all the people that showed up, and people start to think, well, they didn't really want our input. They just wanted to make this a formality, like checking off the box. Okay, we had a meeting, but we're going to do what we want to do anyway.
That's a real problem, David Snyder, I believe, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. And whether an agency will listen to the people that make comments or absorb what those people say is an open question. And I think in many cases they won't. That said, I think the impact that you can have by attending a local meeting versus trying somehow to get your voice heard in Washington, D.C. is tremendous. The opportunity to affect government action directly is really most available and maybe only available at the local level. So I think having your voice heard, even if you think that it may not ultimately make a difference in the way this, in the direction the ship is being steered, is really important. And learning about enough about the process so that you can participate is also really important, though I recognize the challenges to doing that are great.
But look at these kind of challenges. I'm going to read a couple of comments, and let me go to you, Mindy Romero, on these. A listener writes, I've stopped going to city council meetings because the council members talk endlessly, but the public gets 2 minutes. If the council would cut their comments to the essential aspect of the topic, I would go more frequently. And another listener named Yoichi writes, last year, I went to a Caltrain community workshop. I commute via Caltrain and bike every day. The experience of the meeting was a huge deterrent on my willingness to engage again in a public forum. It was the most Trumpian experience I have ever witnessed in person. The whole workshop was a charade to engage with the public, but Caltrain didn't take any of the public suggestions into account and simply made the decision they originally had planned. There it is again.
Well, I feel feel badly for those individuals that
so
took
do
the
I.
time
but,
to
you know,
do that.
It raises a question of what needs to be done and the immediacy of what needs to be done.
I think there's two things. First off, people can't give up. And I know that's a hard thing to ask for many people, again, when they're sacrificing precious time from their family and home. They can't give up because certainly if they're not there, then things aren't going to get better. They could only get worse if you really feel like that particular body or commission is not listening. And many do. We want to still be positive about where it happens. And second, I think we can demand more. We can demand change in our formal structures and in our agencies that conduct public meetings to make them more transparent. Things, simple things like time, when they're scheduled, all that sort of thing. But to innovate in terms of how they engage with the public. And probably one thing we haven't talked about today that I think is really important, education and training amongst elected officials, city council, board of supervisors, public agencies. We do have entities here in California that do training with public officials. The ILG, Institute for Local Government, the Davenport Institute out of Pepperdine, do a lot of work, at least certainly on the public meeting side of it, like engaging, getting people's input. And I'd love to see more work on actually training public elected officials and legislative bodies on how to be receptive and actually give them the techniques to engage with folks. Even if you don't change the rules a lot, how you talk to people, your body language, the time and the respect you give can go a long way, that alone even, to making people feel that they're welcomed and hopefully come back.
Well, here's a listener who writes, I go to a lot of public meetings and childcare is a huge barrier. Shout out to the Department of Children, Youth and their Families Oversight Committee for moving meetings to a child-friendly space and providing childcare. The school board has childcare now, too. When will the Board of Supervisors and other city agencies follow suit? We'll leave that question hanging. I want to bring Myra Melgar into this. And Myra Melgar is a former president of San Francisco Planning Commission. She's a candidate for District 7 supervisor. She also came here from El Salvador originally back in 1982 to escape the civil war there. And it's good to have you with us. Myra Melgar,
thank
welcome.
Thank you so much. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us. I think it's safe to say, although you have some criticisms and I want to hear them, particularly since, given your background, having lived in El Salvador and having escaped from the Civil War there, that these city meetings and meetings that you've had experience with the Planning Commission seem to you to be productive in many ways and certainly useful, and you'd like to see more citizen involvement as well.
Yes, I would. And so I just wanted to provide that perspective, and that is that, you know, it's the price we pay for democracy to have a system where things get messy sometimes, and other people will sometimes talk more than you want them to, and folks get organized. I would just suggest that the flip side of that, not having a system, is not a place where we want to be, because, you know, our system's so clunky. And I agree with what your guests have said. You know, Mindy, I think it, you know, just hit it right, the nail right where it needs to be. And that is that, you know, access is difficult for people, whether you have the education or not to understand the Roberts Rules of Order and all of these things that are clunky, does limit who accesses and whose voice gets heard. All of that is true. But I would say that, you know, I think the system needs improvements, and we need to innovate and recognize what those impediments are and you know, take steps to fix it rather than to say it's broken, we're going to, you know, do something else altogether. Because what we have, which provides...
Excuse me, Myrna, would you start with childcare on that score? I just was talking, you're talking about innovation and things that need to be done. We've been talking a lot about need
absolutely.
For childcare.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely, childcare. But I would say start even before that. So who sits on these commissions is important. And I think, you know, Mindy kind of hit on this. Folks in San Francisco board commissions tend to skew old and male. And I think that folks who are younger, who have kids at home, who have to work for a living, often don't sit on those boards and commissions. So if it's your neighbor who is listening to your complaints, you know, you're much more likely to pay attention. So I think that having mechanisms to get people into that system are the things we want to do there. I was going to make a plug for Urban Habitat. It's an organization in the East Bay that trains people to get on policy, you know, bodies, boards, and commission. And I think that that's a really important part of the discussion as well.
Haven't you also advocated like stipends for young people to get them more involved?
Stipends, also childcare. I think a big thing also is location. So often these meetings are at City Hall or someplace that is not accessible during the day. So having meetings out in the communities, in the evenings, in weekends, just everything that we can do to go to the people, rather have the people come to government, are things that I totally support.
Well, I thank you for joining us and appreciate the time you've spent with us.
Thank you so much.
Myrna Melgar,
for the conversation.
Former president of the San Francisco Planning Commission. Let's go to more of your calls, and let's go to Jake in Oakland. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. So I've been to a lot of Oakland Education Department public forums, and they kind of get pretty messy. And there's just an overwhelming feeling of helplessness and feeling like we have no say because they just keep making cuts without talking to people. And so I'm wondering, how can we make a change to be heard better without just twiddling our thumbs until the next election?
That's an important question. Mindy Romero, some light you could shed on that, perhaps?
Well, sure. Just picking up on Myrna's comment about representation in these bodies. So where they are elected officials, you know, today is voting day, and we have to remember that ultimately, at least for those of us that can vote, we have power in our voters, vote ourselves. And that's another reason why we need to be going to commissions and understanding how they're working and whether, if they're not working, that there's accountability at the ballot box. Beyond that, you know, I think certainly engaging with third parties, right, with media. I mean, this program today is absolutely important. But to get the word out, to mobilize, to work with community groups, work with trusted leadership in your community, that you can start to develop a strategy to demand some changes and to be heard
more. I would love
more.
To think that this program would be a catalyst for people
who
are doing, well, not only for citizens, but particularly, as you said before, for the officials to cut through a lot of the red tape and to make it easier for people to come and to be receptive to some of the things that you both have been suggesting here. And I'm interested Getting a response from you, David Snyder, to a listener's question, Catherine asks, what about the role of lobbyists and land use lawyers in the process and their undue influence?
Well, there's nothing under the Brown Act, the state's open meetings law, that really talks about that issue of lobbying. Many cities and counties have lobbying restrictions and rules. The lobbyists have to register. But I think lobbying at the local level is a problem just as it is in Sacramento and in Washington, D.C. I think that people with money and time to attend these meetings have almost necessarily a greater influence unless the elected representatives sort of correct for that.
Well, we talked about housing before. It's mostly the NIMBY people who show up at these meetings when there's anything mm-hmm. with zoning or any kind of development of housing. There are some people certainly who are citizen activists who believe that they should go to these council meetings and make their voices heard, but they're certainly often, shall we say, drowned out. I think that's just the reality of it. There's also a question here from Patricia. Says, might all these meetings be live streamed on a local TV station, allow comments to be submitted via tweet in real time? There used to be a channel, public television channel, for example, that would carry these just like see.
Hear, hear.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly a possibility. It will let it stand out there.
But again, how they do it matters as well.
Absolutely.
Not everybody finds C-SPAN or when we had the Cal Channel thrilling. So making sure that, again, you really are getting engagement, that it really is interactive, and thinking about how people are digesting the information, that it's being explained along the way as well.
Anne writes, my experience is that the most effective comments are the ones that show that the proposal breaks a law, state or federal. There's something true about. And here's Jill, who writes, as a school board president on the other side of the table, I want to comment that people often do not show up at our meetings until the very last moment. We may have discussed the topic several times in several meetings, and until the emotional rush at the final decision, we hear very little from the public. They then end up frustrated that we're not listening, when in fact we would love their involvement all along. I encourage everyone to receive ongoing notifications from public agencies on their meeting agendas and to review these and participate more often than at the last moment. And we'll bring in another caller here. Let me go next to Chris in Atherton. Good morning.
Yeah. Hey, Michael, here's the real problem. We get good hot topics like this, and guests dance around the actual problem that we're talking about. Neither one of your guests have really focused in on why the engagement is so low. Let me tell you why it's so low. Most bodies that I've been in front of and asked a focused question of, most of them have said to me, we don't respond to questions. I then say to them, I say, wait, Brown Act says that you shall not deliberate and vote on an item that is not agendized. That is different than responding. Many of them are doing this right now. Okay? And so have your two guests respond directly to that, because no one wants to go to a meeting, make a comment, and have no one say anything.
Thank you for that. Chris, let me go first to you on this, David Snyder.
Yeah, I don't think there's a requirement under state law that the agency respond to comments. It certainly doesn't prohibit it. And I think as a matter of courtesy and sort of general communication, it would be good for elected officials to respond to comments in some fashion. I don't think they're required to. It's not like a deposition. They're not under oath testifying and responding to questions. But this raises a point that I wanted to make generally, which is that there's an important element of sort of public culture that factors into this. And what I mean by that is that once there is an oppositional and sort of violently oppositional attitude that sets in between the public and a particular body, it tends to become rapidly unproductive because both sides tend to wall themselves off. And in many instances, that sort of oppositional culture develops for very understandable reasons. But I think it's important for elected officials who are the people in power of that meeting to give a lot and to not immediately react in a sort of hostile way to criticism. One thing the Brown Act does clearly say is that the government agency can't stop you from criticizing the body that you're commenting to. I think elected officials have to be willing to give a little bit of the ego and absorb criticism without becoming oppositional, irrationally oppositional in response.
So we also say there are a couple of pillars to the Brown Act, right?
Well, there's a couple of pillars of transparency in California generally. One is the California Public Records Act and one is the Brown Act.
Right.
And those two laws, I think, can act in concert to ensure that people have access to their government. And with a little bit of help, most people – and they shouldn't even need that help, but my organization and some others provide assistance for understanding both of those laws so that you can use them to their fullest extent.
All right, I want to have Mindy Romero weigh in here. Before, Mindy, you do, I want to ask listeners, if you've had success advocating for an issue within a public meeting system, what did you do? And you can give us a call now at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. Let me just read one of these successful stories from Kathleen, who says, scores of local citizens at a public hearing of the My Open Space District voiced their objections to a plan to put a parking lot at a local scenic site. We're a very small town, so when 36 people stood up to speak at the forum, it was notable. The board listened and reversed their decision, citing public comment as their reason. Then they created a public access working group of local citizens, and we are now working to craft a solution for public access that will meet the aesthetic and safety concerns of the local community. Mindy?
Well, I certainly agree with David's comments. You know, commenting or responding to public concerns and specifically public comments is an important thing. I think there's lots of reasons why we don't see it. Some of it is the reality if it's a really hotly contested issue and you've got multiple, many opinions coming at you. Commenting on each one of them can be a time issue. I'm not saying that should be a driving factor. Also, commenting on them can potentially make one person feel that the city council member, for instance, is skewed one way or another, and sometimes just kind of being neutral, you're hearing them and taking it all in and listening and then hopefully making a decision. But that's not to excuse it either. I would like to just add one more thing, though, that David said that I think was really, really important. This, you talked about oppositional culture. I just want to extend that. I agree that when a public body and the public kind of get in that state, it's very important for elected officials to be open. And that's why I mentioned something earlier about body language, right? How they respond, everything in terms of how they respond is important to the public. But also, let's just talk about realities in terms of cultural differences, right? Subgroup differences. We have many communities in our wonderful, diverse state that may react differently than what is considered to be appropriate in a legislative body or under Robert Rules of Order, not even knowing what those might be. And often, sometimes we will see elected officials that will not appreciate how that public comment is made, will feel like it's being oppositional or violent or disrespectful. And many people will feel that they are – the public, members of the public will feel that they are being disrespected and not listened to. And it's simply – it's – you know, some of it is implicit bias, if I say. Some of it is just not understanding cultural differences. Whatever bucket you want to put it into, there's a reality of how people come to the table and how elected officials need to be open and hear them in whatever way that they –
But sometimes
that they share that information.
They express themselves. You can have just one person who's obstreperous and using the word violent and so forth who can really put a damper over the whole meeting. And that has to be taken into account too. There are security concerns and the like.
There are. But oftentimes we're not talking about those extreme situations. We're talking about somebody who's angry, upset, hurt, scared, actually come to a public body.
Who needs to vent.
Who had never come before. They're taking their, only 2 minutes? They didn't know they'd only have 2 minutes. And they're talking, and the reaction they receive can be an instant turn off to them and also to everybody else that came with them on that topic because they feel that they were disrespected. They feel that they were potentially even judged by the way they delivered it. And our elected officials are the ones, our public officials are the ones that are responsible for hearing, not being defensive, if you want to call it that, but hearing and getting, at least if they don't have the skills, make sure that they have the skills to be able to hear people where they're at and not put on their own set of values around how people should be communicating.
Yeah, Mindy Romero is director of the California Civic Engagement Project at the University of Southern California. I want to read a comment from a listener named Bruce who says, in Oakland, you stand at the microphone and look up at a semicircle of council members who are raised above you looking down at the lowly citizen. Square table, round table, rectangle, the physical structure of the meeting room says something. Mm-hmm. I actually think the room should be designed in such a way that the citizen is at a podium sitting above the powers that be. There's something to reckon with. And here's Caroline from Tiburon. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Caroline, yes. And I wanted to alert your listeners to Environmental Forum of Marin. It's a wonderful resource for advocacy training. I'm going to use mine this week with my town regarding the use of synthetic chemicals in the environment. And the website for Environmental Forum is marinefm.org.
Thank you, Caroline. And environmental issues are just one of the many myriad number of issues that we've been talking about here that go on at these meetings. Here's a question, and I'm going to go to you on this, if I may. There was a question here that disappeared. So let me go to a caller. We'll figure out what that is all about. Dan is joining us from Elk Grove. Dan, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Great topic. First of all, I want to make a comment. I cover local meetings in Elk Grove regularly, independently. And if something shows up on an agenda, it's almost guaranteed to pass. And in fact, most times it almost passes unanimously. But my question is for David Snyder, whose organization does really great work. People make public information requests, and they're often stymied, I think, by the city council and the city attorneys, knowing that they don't have the financial resources to take them to court. I mean, what can be done in those sorts of situations? Because I know the First Amendment Coalition actually recovered legal fees from the city of Bakersfield recently.
Yeah, we did recently. And it's a really good question and one that I get constantly. What do you do when you get denied access to records and you think that you have a legal right to those records? Unfortunately, the Public Records Act, the only recourse is to sue. And as you suggest, Dan, suing is not really an option for everybody. However, there are other resources. My organization is one of them. We can help you go back to the public agency and continue a dialogue with them in order to convince them that the law requires the disclosure of the records that you're after. And often or sometimes you can sort of broker a compromise where you're able to get some of what you want without getting the entirety of it. So there are resources like my organization and others out there to help people navigate this. But as with the Public Records Act, the Brown Act, which governs open meetings, was originally intended to be used by anybody and enforced by anybody over the many decades that those laws have been into place.
David, excuse me. I think you just answered the vanishing question. It was from Karen, who says, who enforces violations of the Brown Act? And she writes, in my experience with the San Rafael School Board, they have violated the Brown Act by having private votes and there wasn't anyone to enforce.
Yeah, the Brown Act is enforced by people or by organizations. So my organization.
Like a citizen's arrest?
Sort of. There actually is, some people don't know this, but there is actually, it can be a misdemeanor to violate the Brown Act. To my knowledge, that's never actually been prosecuted. The DA can also bring an action under the Brown Act, but that very rarely happens. So it's up to the public to notice these violations, then to ask the agency to stop violating the Brown Act. And if they don't stop violating the Brown Act within 30 days, then you can bring a lawsuit.
And Rob writes, the California Public Utilities Commission does public hearings as well as any agency in the state. They usually schedule the meetings for 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. to allow people to have access to speak. In addition, I served as the commission's public advisor for 15 years, and during that time, I sat at the entrance to these meetings, and in addition to signing people up to speak, was available to answer questions that the public had. Let me bring another listener in. Peter, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, hi. It's Peter Warfield from Library Users Association. Enforcement is definitely a problem. Another issue is also, what is it that has to be decided by a policy body? In San Francisco, we have enforcement, if you like, through the Sunshine Ordinance and the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force, but it's a very long, slow process to get a hearing, and even if you win, there's no enforcement, basically, of a decision in your favor. We've won many decisions, and they haven't always resulted in getting changes that we wanted or the material that we wanted with respect to the library. There's no there's no enforcement, for example, for multiple violations as well. Another issue is that there simply isn't. The library, for example, decided to cut sending printed notices by mail to 19,000 people who wanted it and never even brought it up at the Library Commission, never made any notices anywhere within the library, and basically considered it an administrative sort of a decision. Luckily, we were able to make enough of a ruckus among activists and other people that we engaged so that the library reversed its decisions fairly prompt, this decision fairly promptly. But they simply never had any discussion or any publicity about this decision at all, even though it affected a lot of people. So the question then is, what are they doing administratively that really affects people but is never even brought up to the public view?
Thank you, Peter. Good to hear from you. We're coming to the end of this hour. Catherine wants to know, well, actually, Michael wants to know, is there some kind of rating system for public institutions, like a report card? How can the DMV continue to be on everyone's most hated list and do so little to improve? Maybe we should have public hearings rated. I mean, it wouldn't necessarily be a bad idea. How you disseminate that information and who you would get it to would be part of the challenge, but we've had a lot of good ideas in the course of this hour, and I thank you, both David Snyder and Mindy Romero. We also heard from Patrick Sisson and Myrna Melgar earlier on. And on a day when people are thinking of voting and exercising their franchise, think also of being more involved in the public process that's open for you. Activating democracy. Public meetings are broken. Help fix them. Thank you all for being with us. Thank you to the callers and the listeners. And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. Appreciate your listenership, and thank you for being a part of the program. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.